everybody. I'm Ione Butler. I'm the founder of Uplifting Content. And today I have a fantastic guest for you to listen to. Her name is Heather Preet. And we met a couple of weeks ago. She was teaching a meditation class at the Den Meditation in Los Angeles. And at the time I was very flustered and frustrated. And her advice and just her presence really, it calmed me down and it was so beneficial. And so I asked if she could join us for a chat today so that she can share some of her wisdom and knowledge. And so thank you so much, Heather, for agreeing to do this and being here today.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Of course. I'd love for you to just to start by telling everybody a bit about yourself and what it is that you do.
Yeah. So, as you know, my name is Heather Preet. I began studying Buddhist psychology in a Tibetan lineage over 20 years ago and became very involved and went through a teacher training. And from there, I've gone on to secular mindfulness. I work through UCLA teaching through the Mindful Awareness Research Center. I'm an artist and I was a stage actor for much of my life. I'm initially from Chicago. And at this point, you know, mindfulness and the practices are pretty much 24/7 for me. So I teach 6 days a week, actually.
Wow.
Maybe a little too much, but it's my passion and it's been extremely transformative in my life and through my own difficulties. You know, you mentioned difficulties, and that's really what this practice is meant to work with, is kind of the challenges of being human. So when I found it, I realized, wow, this is really the answer for me. And I haven't looked back. I've just gone deeper and deeper.
I have so many questions to say, and I don't even know where to start. Okay. So first of all, how did you find your way into it? And I'm going to ask you other questions because I'm so curious. How did you find your way into it? Let's just start with that. I'm so excited. I'm sorry. I need to calm down.
Well, you know, actually, I had been searching for a while. I was studying, I was at DePaul University studying psychology while I was doing Equity Theater in Chicago, in between shows. And I also was studying Eastern religions and contemplative practices. So I really found sort of the mystic traditions very, they resonated a lot with me. And it wasn't about a specific paradigm or a specific type of practice. It was just really about that introspection, looking in, finding the inner goodness, finding a place of peace and compassion, and sort of relating that to something much more expansive to than what I now know is called the thinking mind. And so as I was sort of studying that, I became very interested, but I hadn't found Buddhist psychology yet or mindfulness yet. And it was really when I was here in Los Angeles, and I would just read books that I was drawn to, and I found a book by Thich Nhat Hanh, and I started reading it, and I was like, this is the truth. And I just delved in from there and began searching for places to practice and teachers and
places. What is that book? Sorry, just to cut you off. What is the book?
So I think that the book I was reading at that time was called Living Buddha, Living Christ.
Okay.
And it's really beautiful. It's about the connection of sort of the truth of these peace activists, these sort of masters of the human condition, of kindness and forgiveness and love. And it's definitely not about the religion. It's about what it is that we can resource within us that these people represent. It's really neat. In Vietnam, there's actually a statue of Buddha and Jesus with their arms around each other.
I love it. I love it. There was a meme that was going around and it said, Jesus was not a Christian. Before Jesus, there was no Christianity. Before Buddha, there was no Buddhism. You know, before all these religious leaders, it's not the religion. They were all teaching love. So they're all there. They're all enlightened beings here to guide and try and teach us love. And it's gone in very strange ways, but you're right. They had the same mission.
That's right. And, you know, both of them came from suffering. That's what's really interesting, is both of them came from suffering. Even Siddhartha. You know, he was a prince when he started searching, but he came from the suffering of not being connected to humanity, to real life. That kind of kept him in this palace. Mm. We can identify this, I think, a lot in LA. Mm. Kept him in this palace where he was treated a certain way, where he had dancing ladies, all the best foods, diamonds, silks, and yet he felt this emptiness. Mm. He went outside of the castle and he saw that people had difficulties. And then he wanted to learn how to help. So this is really the teachings, and it's for all people.
Yeah. And I just want to clarify for anyone that wasn't sure, Siddhartha is the name of the Buddha. So that was his story. He was born a prince, you know, had all these luxuries, was never shown anything negative, and then sort of went out and saw suffering and was like, what is this? And then meditated for a long time and did a lot of things and then became the Buddha. So can you tell me, it's just like a little summary of the Buddha.
That's right, a summary.
The Buddha in 3 seconds.
Buddha psychology.
Yeah, by Ione Butler. Could you tell me about the type of practices that you sort of started to learn and develop and how they've helped you?
Yeah. So I really started with the compassion practices. So there's a lot of research right now around self-compassion and the way that compassion affects the brain and neuroplasticity. So when we first started teaching secular mindfulness, it was really about the anchor practices or hooking into the present moment. And we did a lot of research around how that affects our brain in positive ways. And now the second wave is really addressing, you know, what is self-compassion do? What does compassion do? And actually, that was my doorway in. I started with Tibetan compassion practices and a lot of universal compassion. And those were transformative in the sense that we build a resiliency because we find that there's something within us that can hold suffering without being disturbed by that suffering. Mm-hmm. So oftentimes what happens is, see, I had very bad chronic anxiety, like very, very bad chronic anxiety at that time. And I had done everything to run away from it. I mean, I'd done everything to run away from it. And because I identified with the anxiety. So I thought if I went into the body, the only thing I was going to find was suffering. And if I trusted my thinking mind, it had thoughts that were thoughts of worry, stories of doom, stories of, you know, what I did wrong in the past, what could go wrong in the future. So I really couldn't trust my thinking mind. And I hadn't been steered towards another aspect of the self that is meant to care for and hold all this. Now, this is what's really interesting, is that human beings have many different aspects of self. However, because we get so caught in our survival mind, we're really missing the thing that's meant to care for everything. So the compassion practices showed me that I had great strength, resiliency, sort of an unwavering ocean of love and kindness within me. So I could go in and I could care for what was here, and then I could also spread it out to others, to all living beings. That's how we do it in Tibetan Buddhism. And in mindfulness, we have a big emphasis on the self-compassion. So really bringing ourselves into that circle of compassion to heal our difficulties.
Yeah, I think it's incredibly important. There's a couple of things I wanted to say. Just before we started this live stream, I was saying, I think self-compassion is really important because right now I'm going through a bit of a tough time. Like, I like to be honest and open about depression. It's something that I've had on and off for a really long time. And so I kind of made a vow to be open about it because I just think so many people don't communicate with it. And I think self-compassion, what you were saying, I think that is so important because it's the hard times that I give myself and the frustration and the annoyance. And it's kind of like, just kind of check in and be kind to yourself from time to time. So I wanted to get your thoughts on that. And then also one of the things which ties in, I noticed on your website, you say you help people with compassion fatigue. And so I'd love for you to chat about, how taking self, being more compassionate to yourself to overcome things, and also about compassion fatigue.
Yeah, definitely. So rephrase the first part of the question.
So right now I'm feeling like just kind of going through a bit of a tough time, sort of trying to keep on top of everything and just feeling a little bit stuck and frustrated with myself and the environment, and just how how does self-compassion, how can I sort of use that to move forward or move through it?
And this is a really important point. And, you know, I work with a lot of people, and this story tends to be very much the same as far as how the thinking mind works with our difficulties. Mm-hmm. And usually it's to add more difficulty. You know, usually there's a lot of judgment, maybe even an anger towards the body for having depression, a sense that there's something wrong with me or I'm broken. These are all just stories. The thinking mind, you know, it's not our enemy. It's just that we need to train it and let it go.
Yeah.
So what ends up happening is that we have sadness, we have depression, we have anxiety, and we build more and more contraction around it. This just adds to our anxiety and our depression. So if we're having a hard time and we're quite hard on ourselves, imagine what it would be like if a child was having a very hard time because they felt somehow that they weren't living up to other children in their school. And we decided the antidote to them feeling sad was to beat them up verbally for being sad. Mm. What would that do to the child?
Yeah, it'd be heartbreaking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But when we think about that, it hurts our heart, right? It hurts to think of that. Mm. But we do this to ourselves all the time, all day long. Part of mindfulness is just a metacognition, just realizing that there's that inner voice. So it's like we have pain, we have suffering, then all of a sudden we judge it as a shortcoming.
Mm.
Okay, so now what would we do with that child if we were compassionate and loving? What would be the antidote? We pick up that child, rock them, soothe them, tell them we understand its heart. First of all, acknowledging that they're suffering. That's a big thing, is acknowledging that they're suffering. We don't say, that's a little suffering, you know. There are people who are really suffering, get over it. We don't say that.
Some people do say that.
if we want it, this is true, and that's very, it's hard, but we can also all know, even if that's our go-to, because that's how we've learned to care for difficulties, is to sort of explain them away or say that they're not worthy. We can also understand, there's an aspect of ourselves that understands that that's not the antidote, that doesn't heal anything. So suffering needs healing. So we say, I know this is a moment of suffering. I know that you're sad. Like, what can we do? You know, maybe help the child focus on their positive qualities. Well, maybe you're having a hard time in math. We can give you some help there, maybe a tutor. But I also want you to think about how wonderful you are at art. You know, we want to balance this idea of the self. You know, look at what's positive. Create equanimity. So compassion, first of all, it goes to with kindness and soothe. So that's the first part, we soothe, right? So rocking a child would release oxytocin, help them soothe. Second thing is we want to acknowledge that this is suffering. And notice when we belittle our suffering, because no suffering is too small in mindfulness. We don't judge the suffering. It's here. Depression is here. Anxiety is here. Sadness is here. Self-doubt is here. It's not our enemy, and it's not us either. Yeah. So then we identify with the aspect of the self that can hold all this. Listen, care, you know, offer beauty, equanimity, all of these beautiful qualities. So it's not that we're trying to get rid of our depression, but the depression is like a child that's calling for the parent to care for them. Depression is like a tiny energy within us that's asking for our compassion, mindfulness to hold it and care for it. Thich Nhat Hanh has a really beautiful way of describing this, and he talks about one energy caring for another.
I like that.
So the energy isn't meant to go away. Mm. It's actually made from our awareness. It can't go anywhere. But what we're doing is we're adding another energy to it to transform it. Mm-hmm. So we don't push the child out the door. Mm-hmm. We add kindness, and the child transforms.
I like that. From when you started speaking earlier, that analogy that you just made at the end about the depression being like the child and you needing to take care of it really helped kind of understand the full picture of what you were talking about there. I think that's a beautiful way of looking at it. It's quite interesting because I would say that I've spent a lot of time on personal development. We've got a summit series right now where we've interviewed 11 guest speakers on the topic of what keeps you uplifted. And I interviewed all the women for the summit. And so, you know, every day I'm listening to the interviews that we've done again. And I was speaking during the interviews to these women, all these fantastic tips. And so I have all of this information about it. And yet these feelings sometimes still persist. But I think the difference where I'm at, where you know it kind of makes me sad for other people that they might not be there yet, is I have the awareness of it. I know that it will pass. I'm a bit more compassionate with myself about it. I don't give myself a hard time. And something that came up repeatedly in the summit conversations that I was having with these women was that it's about feeling it and experiencing it and not trying to put a lid on it. And I think that's the place I'm at now. And for me, it's very frustrating. Like, I have so many things to do and work on that sometimes in these states of depression, I just give up and I'm like, I just can't do anything. And then that's frustrating, but you need to experience it. And cause I can't, you know, every time I try and sort of fight through it, it's exhausting and it doesn't really get me anywhere. And kind of working with that energy is never very constructive. So being that caring person, feel it. Yeah. Experiencing the feelings.
Beautiful. And you just said something that's really important that I'll add here too, is that sometimes our mindfulness is not developed enough to hold something like depression. So we can bring in a compassionate caregiver in our meditation. So when we do this, it's like we can know this, I can say this, we can know it, walk around. It actually doesn't do much for rewiring our brain unless we sit and practice it. Mm. So what we would do is we would notice that depression's here, label it depression. Mm-hmm. Now we're going to get out a story, drop into the body, sense it into our body. Where is it? Where am I holding this energy? Then we're going to step back. And like we're watching waves on the ocean, notice sensation. So we get to know the depression. And this is very important. Usually we're pushing away, how can we love somebody, something if we don't know its story? Mm. So we want to be there with it. And when we say story, we're not talking about thoughts, but we're talking about sort of this little dance. Be there with it. And then adding the compassion. Now, sometimes our mindfulness, like I said, isn't strong enough yet to hold it. So there's a really important trauma-informed way to practice this. And it's dipping our toe in. So we can touch into the feeling of depression and then titrate out to something like sound or the sensation in our feet until the mind settles, softening the body, softening. And then gently come back, touching in, coming out to something neutral, resting on it, bringing in our mindful awareness, softening. And in this way, we start to realize that sensation is not so scary. It's not the monster that we thought it was.
So are you saying when you're having that experience of it, just kind of allowing yourself to experience it again, sort of, to feel the feelings and then sort of step away from it? Is that what you mean?
Yeah. So if we were going, let's say we're going to do a meditation, I would notice the sensation in my body. And then when I started feeling like I was identifying with that sensation, let's say I start feeling like I'm overwhelmed by it, then I change my focus. So I take my awareness and I turn it towards listening to sounds. Something quite neutral.
Oh, I see. So something, just a sound or a visual thing outside of... So you're taking your mind away from it. Oh, I see. And it's amazing that in that moment you can then you can come out of it and realize that you can be away from it. You don't have to be in it all the time.
That's right. So this is a really important point. We don't have to, feeling it doesn't mean we have to immerse into it and become overwhelmed by it. Mm. That's actually what we do kind of all day long. Usually, you know, so what we're going to learn to do is we're going to learn to see the big picture. And this is called equanimity. And I use that word a couple times. It's like a balance of mind, seeing everything. So when we're depressed, that becomes tunnel vision, right? Mm. And if we're like, I have to feel this, we can actually start wallowing or becoming the depression. Mm. What we want to do is we want to still be aware that there's this awareness of ourselves, awareness that we can tap into the sensation, but we can also move out into something where that depression isn't being held. So something neutral, we can even open our eyes and look at the beauty of the sky, begin to settle into that beauty.
Are you hearing that ringing? I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry, everyone. It's my aunt's birthday. And she's trying to call me to so I can wish her happy birthday. Bless her. But I didn't realize that it would ring through this whole thing. So apologies for the incessant ringing, guys. Sorry.
That's okay. Yes, so this is building resilience, because we can turn our awareness to the beauty of the sky, bring that into sort of like this feeling of like connection, or that we are not so small. We're not just the emotion.
Mm.
When we're ready and we're settled, we can tap back in. Mm. So this is sort of training the mind that when depression arises or anxiety arises, that there's still other aspects of our experience. This builds something called resiliency, meaning that we feel strong enough to hold all of these things.
Right?
So we're not overwhelmed. So when we say experiencing it, it's not about having to push through. And I really want it. That's not compassionate. Right? We touch in, give some kindness to the self, touch in. And then over time, all of a sudden we're like, wow, my mindfulness can rest without being overwhelmed by this. It can rest in the awareness of the sensation of the depression, and I can just send it kindness.
Yeah.
But step by step, gentle. So this is part of compassion practice, always very gently touching and gently touching.
I like that. Thank you. That's definitely something that I will continue to work on. And I think it would be beneficial for a lot of people to work on, because I mean, I'm in a different place to what I was before, but some of the things I would say to myself was not very compassionate at all. And, you know, the things that I just know that some where people's minds go and the way they talk about themselves and to themselves, and it's just so cruel. And it's like, no. Be that little child. You wouldn't talk to a little child like that. Don't talk to yourself like that. So this is really beautiful and valuable. Thank you so much. Would you tell everybody how they can sort of find out more about you and where they could catch you?
Yeah, absolutely. So my website is just heatherpreetmindfulness.com. So it's very easy. And there's a list of different places that I do guided drop-ins, classes that I teach. My recordings are not on there at the moment because they got erased when we redid my website, unfortunately, but I am on a health app called Aura. And you can also get in contact with me for Skype sessions, one-on-ones. I work with people individually who are going through difficulties so we can slowly start to build that muscle of kindness and compassion towards the self. So heatherpreetmindfulness.com.
Thank you so much, Heather. Just before we end, I just want to remind you all again that we have the Uplifting Content Summit. It's still live. It's free to join up to. If you've already registered, you have access to Adam Sadiq's interview today. I love Adam Sadiq. He's just a wonderful human being. I haven't seen that interview yet, but I can't wait to watch it later. And if you haven't already, go to www.upliftingcontent.com/summit. And it's free to sign up. And you've got Alexi Panos coming up, Michael Graziano, Christine Hassler, Donnie Epstein, and Peter Kelly still to come. It's amazing. The topic is too uplifted. So I just need to just keep rewatching the summit interviews and then I'll be good. Heather, thank you again. You've been fantastic. And, I look forward to seeing you again for more meditation.
I know.
Again. I'm definitely going to be back.
I look forward to seeing you again.
Yes, take care.
Bye, everyone. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Let's Talk About with me, Ione Butler. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast, and if you like it, please leave a review on iTunes. For more information, go to ionebutler.com or upliftingcontent.com. Speak to you soon.